Now it is my privilege to introduce our second workshop leader. Please help me offer a warm Tulare County welcome to our workshop leader, Linda V. Griffin.
Thank you. Hi, my name's Linda. I'm an alcoholic. Wow. I'm a little overwhelmed just by the first speaker already. I feel like you're going to be going, man, I have no papers. I have nothing to hand out. I have no directions except for this big book. And I just have my experience, strength, and hope. And I want to thank them for doing that inventory proceeding with us, because I'll tell you my experience, strength, and hope. That's all I can tell you. And that's the way I was taught, and that's what I'm going to do. First of all, I want to thank Bill for asking me to come up here. And 3 hours, I live 3 hours north of you. I have a little hometown with 3 meetings a week. So that's where my home group is, the Monday Night Big Book group in Ripon. And it's a Tuesday night group and a Thursday night group. And sometimes I can go to the Thursday night group, but it starts at 8. There's a bunch of old-timers, and they say, well, we used to work and then come home and have dinner with our wives, and we go to an 8 o'clock meeting. I'm like, 8 o'clock? I'm going to go to bed, you know? So what happened is that Bill had asked me to do something on a Wednesday night, and it's the only time I've really ever said no in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've never said no unless like something like this. I couldn't make it down here after work on a Wednesday night. So, and then go back and have 2 teenagers, so he asked me to do this instead. My sobriety date is April 6, 1979, and next month I'll have 35 years of sobriety, continuous sobriety. And my experience with the steps is a little bit different in that I want to share with you a little bit how they've applied to my life as an old-timer. Because I don't know what the age of sobriety is. Are there any newcomers here in their first, second, or third AA meeting ever in this room? How about the first 30 days? Okay, so everyone here is a bunch of old-timers, so that's what I'm talking to. Some of them are right. And that makes that helps me a little bit, because sometimes when you're brand new, like I don't know if I'd have seen an inventory like that if I was brand new, I'd have panicked, I think. For me, I was panicking, and I have almost 35 years, you know. So thinking, oh, my God, I didn't do it right. Oh, God. And I could tell you a little bit outside, like, you guys might be a little disappointed that you brought me all this way. I got sober at the Fresno Fellowship, and two of the people that came with me today, Kathy and Carol, are really close to me, and Carol saw me get sober. And I was a 20-year-old, and my experience with the 12 steps was like this, and I'm very grateful for this, but the minute I got sober, they said, you need a sponsor, and you need to start working the steps. There was no, like, step-a-month club. I would have died and drank on the step-a-month club. It'll do one step a year, that kind of thing. The ethic in my home group was you start working the steps, and you start working them quickly. And I know Chris, he's a friend of mine, he and I have had lots of conversations about getting people working the steps right away. What I love about our book and our program is that very in the beginning of the book, it says there's no lectures to endure. There's no me telling you how to do it the right way. There's no access to grind, fees to pay. It's like somewhere around 18 or 19, it says that. And for me, I can only share with you the experience, strength, and hope, what's worked for me. I came to you a really broken kid, and I was willing to do whatever it took to get sober. And he's already covered step 4, and I know you guys have already done step 1, 2, and 3, but there's a part in our book that I know that I'm hearing in this group here that says, if you're seriously as middle of the road as we were, you know, I mean, or as serious alcoholic as we were, there's no middle of the road solution. There's only one solution, it's the 12 steps. I mean, dances are fun, dinners are fun, banquets are fun, all these things are really a lot of fun, and the fellowship is really fun. But I would have died if I just had done the fellowship. Because the fellowship can't keep me sober. And staying away from booze can't keep me sober. You know, shielding myself, it talks about it later in the book, if I try to shield the sick man from temptation, that's not going to work. You know, I have to have a spiritual experience because I have a disease that is, when I think about alcoholism, I think about an internal spiritual malady, the ISM, that's the way I learned it, and that the only solution for an internal spiritual malady is a spiritual experience. And then we get that through working the 12 steps. So I know this is a workshop, so I'm going to tell you what I did, and specifically want to talk about what I did in the chapter of Into Action, because that's where steps 5 through 11 are. There's a whole other chapter on working with others, which is like a whole day in of itself. But it, in the steps, now let me back up. When I first got sober, I had a sponsor. She had a couple of years, and she said, write everything about yourself for the fourth step. So I wrote everything about myself. I wrote an autobiography. And then I shared with her the fifth step, which is what it says to do, is tell somebody your whole story, which is your autobiography. That's not the fourth step. So I didn't do a fourth step, like we were talking about earlier, until I was 10 years sober, until I was dying. But I had 10 years of sobriety before I worked the columns and the steps just like out of the big book. So I get really nervous when people say you're doing this step wrong or this step wrong or this step wrong, because I think, man, I'm not drinking and I'm doing the best I can. For me, as a 20-year-old, if you'd have told me, I would have been overwhelmed. And again, when I got sober, there were no 20-year-olds. They were all 40, like ancient people. And now I'm 55, you know, and it's like, I really laugh when I think about 40-year-olds being old. You know, and there's some places in the book that I want to talk about, but what I did in my early sobriety was I just did as much as I could for the first 10 years. I got all the way up to step 12, and I kept just going over and over and over. So I had the same relationship over and over again, same boyfriend over and over again, you know, same job problems over and over again, until I did the fourth step out of this, like out of the book. And I saw the causes and conditions, and I saw my behavior. And so the fifth step for me was pretty crucial, because what it says right away, when I was 10 years sober, I became a student of the big book. And what I did was I wanted to find out every place in the big book that talks about when we're going to get drunk. That's all I cared about. I didn't want to work it perfectly. I just wanted to know, when are we going to get drunk? And the one it says if we skip this vital step, we're quite sure to drink, and it's talking about step 5. And what I know about step 5 is that if I keep a secret from my sponsor specifically or anybody else, I've got secrets, I'm going to get drunk. And anybody I know who's gotten drunk has said to me, I kept this one secret, this one small thing from my sponsor. And I can tell you what it was like for me at 10 years of sobriety to do that step, but I can also tell you at 25 years of sobriety, I was having an affair. I was looking at my ex-husband's back in my bed thinking, I'm going to get drunk. I have 25 years, and I'm looking like an old-timer, going to meetings, looking good, shaking hands, doing all my commitments, sponsoring people, and I'm having an affair. And an affair starts as a text. We didn't text then. We didn't have that. Or it starts as an email, or it starts about some kind of flirtation or something that's outside of my marriage, outside of my relationship. And, you know, it's been on tape enough now that my kids know. I told them because I wanted to control the information and tell them what it was in case they ever heard it. And what happened for me as an old-timer was my sex conduct was harming other people. And it's the other place it talks about in the book that we're going to get drunk. Their sex conduct continues to harm other people, we're quite sure to drink. If I don't enlarge my spiritual life, if my resentment, you know, if I have resentment, it talks about that in the fourth step. If I don't enlarge my spiritual life, back in the third step, I'm like the guy with the carpet slippers and the bottle. Out comes the bottle. And I think, I got this, I've been sober all these years. And so, to tell you what I did with this chapter in particular, when I got about 10 years sober, I started to find out what the book really said about the steps. And I think that's what you're doing here today. After I did my fifth step and I told my sponsor everything about me that I knew about me, and I was no longer keeping secrets, that was when the weight was lifted. And I know you can do a 3-column inventory, a 10-column inventory. It doesn't matter to me. I know that the book matters to me. I have to find out what the book says. And the book says, I got to find out what my behavior is, and I got to clean it up. Because I'm doomed to repeat it. And so 6 and 7 in the big book are like 2 paragraphs. That's it. I thought I had to write about my character defects. I thought I had to do work on my character defects. It doesn't say that. It says, here they are, I ask God to remove them. Because if I was powerful enough to remove my defects of character, I would have done it already, right? So, step 8 and 9, there's like 9 pages of step 8 and 9. If you're ever going on a road trip with a newcomer, have them read that part out loud to you. Because that's what it takes about an hour to read that out loud, because I've done that with a lot of women. Because that 8th step and that 9th step, it gives every possible scenario. There's no wiggle room for alcoholics. There's no way to get out of an amends. And the big thing now that I've noticed is people saying, well, you know, I wouldn't want to do that. It might have harmed them. And it's sort of like the out. Like, I don't have to do it, right? It might harm them. Well, I think for me, I have to put my sobriety first, okay? And of course I don't want to harm other people, and of course I don't want to be reckless with my amends. But I do have to make them. And if I harmed a person, I asked my sponsor if I could text my amends to somebody. And she said, did you harm them in text? Because if you did, then you could text them back that way, you know. But if you harm them face-to-face, you really got to find them. And, you know, I'm not, this being a step workshop, it kind of tripped me up a little bit because I don't know how to give you, like, what I just saw. I don't know how to do that. It's not my experience. My experience is at different parts of my sobriety, different levels, different times and ages of my sobriety, I've applied the steps in a different way. When I was 25 years sober and I was going to drink, I remember standing with Kathy. We were at an NCCAA conference. The woman who was speaking was Sharon C. She's my sponsor, and her sponsor is a guy named Clancy. And I went up to her and I said, do you sponsor people out of town? And she said, it depends. And I said, it sounded like no to me. I'm like, oh my God, I'm 25 years sober and I want to drink. And, you know, I had a lot of ideas before this time in my life about how you should do the steps perfectly. Until my life began to unravel. And until my life, and then I was like grasping whatever I could do to stay sober, whatever I could do. And I got a hold of this woman, and what she had me do was just like I had been doing when I was brand new, calling her every day, telling her I wasn't going to do that thing anymore, and I did it every day, and I kept saying I'm not doing that, and then I'd have to call her back the next day and say I did do it yesterday, but I'm not going to do it today. I mean, this went on. And I was telling Carol earlier that by the time that my sponsor and I had been together 5 years, I told her, Sharon, we've been together 5 years, and she said, it feels longer, you know, because I was one of those sponsees, man. I was like, I was just, my head goes crazy, and the steps are really a good antidote for my kind of thinking, my kind of magical thinking that I'm going to fix it, I'm going to apply myself well to this situation, and I'm going to go, and I'm going to barrel through, and it's going to work out perfectly, just perfectly. You know, I bookmarked a couple of things because I wanted to look smart, you know, like I knew the book. I do know the book, but I wanted to be prepared because I know it's a workshop, and I saw people walk in with, like, paper and pencil and stuff. I noticed nobody's writing anything that I'm saying down, but it's okay. That my drinking and my behavior in later sobriety is just like the guy in More About Alcoholism when he said, as I crossed the threshold of the dining room, thought came to mind that would be nice to have a couple of cocktails, nothing more. That is my behavior when I get out of God's will and God's grace. And it doesn't have to do with drinking. It has to do with other things, with thinking. My thought is, I'll just call him at 10 o'clock and see if he's available for coffee. Okay, if you have relationship problems, you might identify with this. Or, you know, I'll just, some other way that I leave God is by going back into myself. And so what I have found is that the only solution for that kind of thinking is spiritual. And the only way to do that is to get out of myself. Now, I know I'm not going to talk about the 12 steps because the 12 step doesn't say if you don't do 12 steps, you're going to get drunk. The 12 step. It says this is a way to ensure your sobriety is to help other people and to get out of yourself. And I can't believe I've been talking 10 minutes and I'm a little overwhelmed like with the format. So I hope you guys aren't disappointed. All I know is that the way that this program was given to me was shoved right down my throat. You either want it or you don't want it. And I have seen lots of different ways that people work the steps that look a little bizarre to me because they're not from the book. But it's really not for me to judge that. I can only do what's for me in this book. All I know is that at a certain time, and when it says that alcoholic has no mental defense against the first drink, it has to come from these 12 steps. So from the age of 25 years of sobriety until now, which is 10 years, okay, what's been happening for me is that you get to this place in Alcoholics Anonymous where you look really like you're an old timer, and you look really important because you have all these years. And people celebrate you, and they give you birthday cakes like we do in Renew. It's really exciting. I'm real excited to have 35 years. But I have found that I have to apply the steps today just like I apply them early on in my sobriety. That I don't get a pass just because I haven't had a drink for a long time. That I don't get to rest on my laurels because there are no laurels. By the time I was looking at my ex-husband's back in my bed, there I had nothing to rest on. 25 years of sobriety meant nothing. It didn't even mean experience strength and hope. I had no hope. I was destitute. I was depressed. Going to be suicidal momentarily in long-term sobriety. And so the hope for me was that somebody with longer sober than me, my sponsor, taught me how to go back and get back involved in the fellowship, back involved in getting out of myself, back involved in helping newcomers and helping other people work the steps. I don't have a lock on how to do this thing perfectly. I do know that at one point in my sobriety, I did do the 12 and 12 steps. I worked out of the 12 by 12, which to me, at this point in my life, I don't use the 12 and 12 at all. I mean, it just makes no sense to me. It's like almost some of the things are opposite of what you see in the big book, except for the 10 step. We used to have in my home group a 10 step meeting, and it was a 12 and 12 meeting, and we would read out the 10 step. And it said something like, you write your inventory in black and red ink. I don't know if you remember that part, but I was so stupid. I was writing in black and red ink. I mean, I was just trying to get this thing right, you know? So I've worked it with the 12 and 12, and I've worked it my way. And I can tell you that if you don't have a sponsor, you cannot work the steps on your own. Now, those guys that are out in the ocean in the Loners Club, they're in the Loners Alcoholics Anonymous group, they have sponsors. They're writing to their sponsors every day. So, like, they have to wait for an answer. Or maybe they have to text and wait 3 hours. We're so used to this automatic answer from sponsorship and automatic help me, fix me, that we're over-relying on sponsors when we're really supposed to be relying on a power greater than ourselves. And so I'll tell you briefly, because I want to talk about sponsorship a little bit, is that when I was brand new, there was no way to get a hold of my sponsor except to go sit in front of her door. There were no answering machines with tapes. There was none of that, till 1981. She didn't have a voicemail. She didn't have a text. I couldn't Snapchat her. I couldn't Twitter her. I couldn't do any of those things except wait on her doorstep. And so I got used to waiting for an answer. And, I think that for me, my sponsor's a really busy lady, and I speak with her once a week on Monday night. And I'm, if a crisis comes up during the week that I need to apply the steps to and I don't know what to do, or I have got some kind of, I'm confused about some kind of direction, then I'll call her or text her. But my reliance is supposed to become on God, because it doesn't say in here that I can spiritually solve my problem by relying on another human being. In fact, it says the opposite of that. The way that I'm doing the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is still from the big book. And I happen to work in a field now of rehab, and it's been really scary here lately. So I'm only going to share my experience with you, and again, I want to apologize because I go with that thing that says there's no lectures to endure. I mean, for you to listen to me tell you how to work the step is ludicrous. You have a book. You have a sponsor, hopefully. And I don't want to demean this process because I know this is a step workshop. But at the same time that I'm saying that, I also want to say that when I was brand new, I was overwhelmed with sitting in a meeting. Just sitting in a meeting. Just listening to somebody talk, I was overwhelmed. And lovingly, people guided me and said, here we are. Here are the steps. This is the only way you're going to get it. So, I mean, at this point, for me, what's happening in my life is that everything starts with the 10th, 11th step for me in the morning. I do that thing that says on awakening. And I could talk about that a little bit because I want to talk about that from the book. When it says that in the 11th step, and right in the 10th step it says it's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action. It's very easy. You look around in this room, anybody who's been here any length of time knows how easy it is to let up. All of a sudden I want to get more money, I want to get a better job, I want that boyfriend to come back, all of a sudden my magnifying mind goes into things that are not God. And so, for me, the 11th step prayer in the morning when it says, on awakening, we ask God for these certain things. We ask God to direct our thinking so it should be divorced from self-pity. And if you've noticed how many times self is written in the big book, I want to say, like, I think we counted at one point. There's a lot. That self is our problem. So when people in the 90s were saying this is a self-help program, it was like, and people still say that. AA is a great self-help program. I'm like, really? Because self is my problem. Self is my problem. So in the morning what I do is I do these 11-step prayer, and I do ask God to direct my thinking, and I ask for plans for the next 24 hours. And we don't stay sober one day at a time. I mean, that's a phrase, that's an AA phrase, but we don't stay sober. We're on the broad highway. We are already sober and rendered sober by the fact of the 12 steps. What I now need to do is look at the next 24 hours ahead and ask God to direct my thinking. I don't pray in the morning, please God, don't help me drink. That's been taken from me. Now, there have been periods in my sobriety where it's been really scary, and I've been, man, I have a gorilla in my head, like we all do, the gorilla that's out there doing push-ups in the parking lot while I'm here being sober. And I like to think of it like that, that my gorilla will come and whisper me and say, you know, you were 20 when you got sober, you could probably have a shot of vodka, just one. You know, I got that thing that will happen. And what I do is I just tend to go to God. And I have a guy that I lived with for a little while, and he had a guy that he sponsored. And the guy said, how do I do the fourth step? And he said, just do what's in the book. Just do it exactly what's in the book. And he came back to him with his fourth step. He said, I'm resentful of Mr. Jones. He wrote exactly word for word out of the book. And the guy stayed sober. He wrote down Mr. Jones, you know. So for me, it's not a complicated process. It's not. But I do know that there have been the times when I've been close to drinking was one of those times where I skipped the vital step when I've had a secret. And again, if you're long-term sober and you have a secret, there's probably three people in this room that have done that or are doing that or have experience of having done it and not doing it anymore. And that has played out for me every single time. If you talk to old-timers, anybody that's around here for a little bit, you know that people that stay sober have had to go through stuff, have had to walk through a lot of scary stuff, losing jobs, losing families. I've lost two marriages, lost a lot of jobs. I was on food stamps last year with a master's degree. You know, there's a lot of things that we walk through here in sobriety. And sometimes I do run to a meeting, like I just got to get my ass to a meeting and sit in the meeting and sit in the chair and sink a little bit lower when I hear chapter 5 starting. I just go, okay, I'm safe. In terms of, I don't know where I was going with that. I don't know how to share with you a specific step. All I know is this, is that whenever, if I do prayer and meditation on a daily basis, then I know which foot to pick up when it comes time to take a step. And that I have to have a connection with a power greater than me. And it's not me. And I want it to be a guy. I want it to be a man, a job, whatever. I live in a super small town, and I'll tell you what's happened for me in the last 7 years or so. I got a divorce in a super small town. This is the good, juicy part of the talk. The woman that next married my ex-husband was my house cleaner, and they were having an affair for 8 years while I was happily going to meetings and being my AA sponsor self and doing my thing. And of course, you all know that I was doing my thing. So, you know, I don't have the perfect AA resume. Like, I started from this amount, and I became this guru. If you think that you're going to get to guru status, let me tell you, the highest you go in Alcoholics Anonymous is sober. That's like the highest. Sober today. And but we talk about these people like they're super gurus, and because sometimes they give us a lot of direction. But living in my hometown, which is super small, three meetings, and having to walk through that, and having to walk through lost jobs. And every day I just put my faith in some kind of higher power because I already had a relationship with God. I already had that was already pounded into me when I was brand new that you have to have a God. You know, if you're brand new, which there's only one person in this room that's brand new, the concept of having a sponsor is the big deal that I can tell everything to. But if you're not brand new, like everybody else in this room, your experience, if you're not doing one of those steps, you'll soon find out. You'll either want to drink or die or commit suicide if you're not doing the steps. Or you can be like, I was in Young People's in Fresno, in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was in their, the Fresno group for a lot of years. I was 30. And a lot of people drank after that. So you can see that all those wonderful things that happen at Young People's conferences and places, they do not keep you sober. Those are a lot of fun. That's what we like to call the fluff. I mean, those are really, really super fun. But that's not how I stay sober. And, I don't know, is there a step that I feel so kind of lost, like I'm not giving you what you want, but I'm just trying to tell you my experiences that I thought I knew how to work the best program at 10 and 12 years sober. I thought I was sponsoring 10 and 12 women. I was got everybody lined up. Everybody was writing 4 steps out of the big book. Everybody was, I was very, very busy. I was very, very active. And then something happens in your life, and you get caught short. And for me, as an old-timer, I guess 35 years kind of qualifies as an old-timer, all right? Bill said it to me earlier. He goes, you've been sober a couple decades. And I went, oh, my God, I've been sober almost 3.5 decades. And that's a long time. And so for me, I almost feel like I'm the newcomer that needs to listen. I need to apply the way I was as a newcomer to Alcoholics Anonymous now. I was told that in the very beginning. If you have a childlike faith in the principles of this program, that you'll do fine. And that's humility. Humility is somebody else is going to teach me how to do something that I don't know how to do. So for me to explain to you steps when it's right here in this book, verse 164, I love the family afterward. There's a lot of good stuff in the family afterward. A lot of good stuff in the wives chapter. A lot of good stuff in the employers chapter that have nothing to do with 12 steps, but how I'm to behave in my life. I have 2 teenagers, and those kids, if something's going on with them, they'll go, no, Mom, we're not suicidal, we're not smoking pot, and we're not wanting to use drugs, okay? And I'm always, because I'm always sort of hovering over them, are you guys okay? You guys taught me how to do that. I became a mother here. I became a mother because of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not a very good wife, or I wasn't a very good wife. I've been a wife twice here. And I tend to get very, very selfish and very my way or the highway. And you can't do that in a relationship. And until I figure out how not to do that in a relationship, it's probably best that I don't give in those. And last week I told my sponsor I was depressed. I said, I'm so depressed. You know, I stopped dating a couple guys. And she said, well, lack of chaos is your dilemma. You know, and I said, and I'm like, okay, well, what do I do now with all my time? She's like, how about get another newcomer? How about work the 12 steps? How about stay involved in the fellowship and the action of Alcoholics Anonymous? There's a difference between action and activity. Activity is anything not working the steps. Activity is all the fun stuff, and you can do all that fun stuff when you're working the 12 steps and have a really good sobriety. And but if you don't, in my experience, if I don't work the 12 steps and only do activity, I will only have a very, very minimal kind of sobriety. The first time that I took step one, when I was brand new, my sponsor said, here's step one, read it. It's super easy. And I said, I'm powerless and unmanageable, my life's a mess. And she said, do you agree with that? And I said, yeah. She goes, well, you've done step one. And the next day was, do you have a God? And in the book, it doesn't just say, hey, you have a God. It says, do you have a God that will solve your problems? So you can have a God. You can come in this place and be super religious. And I'm just going to give you a quick rundown of 1 to 12, what I do now and how I do it. And I don't know how else to fill the time except to share that experience with you. So I did the third step prayer with her on day 3 of my sobriety. On day 4, I was writing my first 4 step. And by 30 days of sobriety, I had done my first 5th step. Now, I wasn't trying to win a prize. The group I was in said, what step are you on all the time? If you're not telling newcomers that we are about 12 steps, then you're lying about our program. Really? Our program is basically 12 steps. So, and I shared with you before, I did the 4th step and 5th step right out of the 12 and 12 autobiography. It was really bad. It was like an F minus on the 4th and 5th step scale. If you're grading it, you know how you sit with people that are working the steps and you sit with somebody and you're doing a 5th step and you're like, man, look at those columns. Those are nice columns. They look good, right? And this person gets really involved and takes 6 or 7 hours and you think, I didn't do a very good job. Well, whatever you miss in step 4 and 5, I'm going to guarantee you will come back. And you'll have to deal with it again. And you'll deal with it the way I deal with it is in step 10 with my sponsor. So the first time I did 6 and 7, I just went home. I said that prayer like it tells about in the book. Take an hour. Said the prayer. That was it. I did exactly what I shared with you in the 8th and 9th step. I went back to every single person that I hurt. Everybody, I puked in somebody's piano with the keys open. You know, kind of a hard amends to make, but I had to do it. Had to drive all the way up to Petaluma and make amends to the guy that I broke his grandma's antique lamp. I didn't get to mail him a check. My sponsor said, you got to go to Petaluma. You know, I didn't send him a letter. I had to go there. And that's what I did. I'm not saying that it's wrong if you do it the other way. That's what I had to do. I had to look people in the face and say, I'm very, very sorry what I did to you, and I promise I won't do it again. My first amends was the guy that I married the second time, if that makes sense. I drove all the way from Fresno State, because I was in a sorority house, that's where I got sober, all the way up to Ripon, and made amends to this guy who I had lied to, because I was a really big liar. I think that's the dilemma I'm having here. I want to, like, and you've asked me to come to a workshop, and I'm thinking, like, man, this is all my experience, and I want to, like, look a little bit smarter, and it's not, this is just the way it is for me. And for me to tell you anything snappier than what I did is like another lie. It's like, this is just what I did. I went to all these people. I went to Ed, the guy that I married, and I said, I'm sorry that I lied to you. I said everything was a lie, and do you forgive me? And he said, I don't even know what you're talking about. I went home. We got married 12 years later and had these two kids. And I'm still trying to make amends to him, even though I can't stand him. Okay? I mean, you think you make amends, people can have all this love in your heart for them. It doesn't always happen that way. Because he's still in my life. And he's still doing moves like I don't like, you know, to my kids. And I have to fight. I'll call my sponsor and she'll go, Linda, you have to get into acceptance. This is the way he is. You're trying to change the situation. You're trying to make it different. You're trying to make him listen to you. Don't you know if you pay half of his car insurance, I'll pay the other half? Come on. You know, I'm trying to do real world situations. And I'm like, these steps make no sense in the real world. That's why I tell my sponsor. They make no sense. I got to go to this guy and I got to be forgiving. And I'll tell you one amends that I did make to him. He is a hunter and he shot an elk. And for hunters, I don't know if there's any hunters in the room, the elk teeth are the big deal, okay? He made me these earrings with elk teeth and diamonds all the way around. They're beautiful, okay? But I wasn't even going to give them to him. I said, I'm not giving him those. They were, like, real expensive. It was a gift. These are my elk earrings, you know? And my sponsor said, you've got to give them back. He wants those earrings. He wants the earrings. They're important to him. They're not important to you. You're holding on to them because you want to piss him off. I'm still not well. I'm sorry. I just, you know, I still didn't want to do that, you know. So he came over to my house, and I walked outside, and he held out his hand, and I handed him the earrings. And it was really, really difficult. But I was willing to go to any length to not slip back into old thinking and old self-centeredness and to do it my way. You know, if you're brand new to Alcoholics Anonymous, I want to welcome you. I like to stay on the firing line of life. That's what you guys taught me. You guys taught me that I've been given a reprieve. I've been given a gift, and I'm supposed to give it back. And I'm going to stop because there's nothing else. I think that our job is to, when you see a brand new person, is to invite them into working the 12 steps and tell them how it worked for you and how it made your life different. I like to say this thing that my grand sponsor says, if you're not alcoholic and you stop drinking, AA has nothing for you. Some dances maybe, you know, some fun times. But if you're an alcoholic of my type, my variety, and you stop drinking, you will be miserable until you work the steps. Because I was. So I apologize for ending early, but I'm going to stop. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. And, you know, I think it may have you know, putting things like this together can be a real challenge because there's a lot of variables and there's just a lot to do, and there's unfortunately not there's not a lot of people involved necessarily, just a few. And so it's easy to miss a detail here or there. And what I think we could have very easily missed is an opportunity to invite Teddy to come back up and to ask Linda and Teddy both to maybe field questions. Because I think that might be a very useful thing to do at this point. Are you up for that?
I'm okay with it, but I was thinking that another thing that might be kind of good is calling on people and letting people share. What do you think? Because that way, what do you think? Are you okay with that?
I'll go with whatever.
Whatever happens is whenever you ask, I know this is my experience, whenever I field questions, then I have to become the expert kind of, like, and I'm not the expert kind of.
Okay, so let's
that's
do
the way I feel about it.
Let's do it. Ask the idiot.
Ask the idiot?
Okay. That wasn't a good choice
that's
of words.
Okay.
But the point is, I don't think Teddy intended to represent himself as any kind of expert either.
No.
These are people who have experience with the steps, and that's what this is all about. So why don't we start with questions, and if it evolves into something else, that's cool too.
Okay.
We've got about 45 minutes or so. And we could stop early too. So,
people want a workshop. So, like, what about if we call in somebody that? What do you think?
Whatever you want to do.
Like a regular meeting, like a regular AA meeting. Is that okay? No. Okay. Who has a question? Anybody have a question? Okay.
Quick question.
Okay.
Okay. So, like. With the fourth and fifth step, like doing the column thing. So, for example, I get upset with my wife, you know, and I figure out why I'm upset, what I have to do being upset. So I figured out what do I do with it, with me having like me seeing why I'm mad and what I have to do with it. Now, okay, now I'm upset at myself. Now, what do? I just cool down, or do I talk to somebody about it? I mean, what do you? Like, not a resentment exactly,
that's
just one little thing I'm mad about, like, at that moment.
Well, here's what I do, and then I'll just tell you what I do. When that happens, I look at I call my sponsor, because I don't have the brilliance at that moment to know what to do. Because I'm like a hothead. I want to go, like, run my car over, I want to just go, okay? So, what I do is I call my sponsor, and she asks me to look at my part. Now, I heard earlier something about my part isn't, like, it assumes that other people have a part, but they do. When Bill had to write his fourth step, he was writing about everybody else first. And at the end it says we turn back to the list. But first, I got to say, my fourth grade teacher embarrassed me when I was in, you know, I'm writing my MF list. These are the people I'm pissed at, okay? Then when I'm all done, when I see something happening in the moment, and I've cooled down, and I've called my sponsor, and I've prayed, and I can see what my part is. It's usually something that talks about earlier in the book that says, where did I set the ball rolling? What part of self did I play in this problem? So we have a solution for that, and this is where I go. The third column is what I take to the sixth and seventh step. My problem is I'm selfish and self-centered, and I want it my way, and I have a huge ego. The only solution for that is to work in six and seven, to ask God to remove my need to be right, to remove my need to be in charge. That's what I do. And of course, you have to walk away. You got to walk away sometimes. That's okay. I'll let you.
Thank you. Thank you, Linda. You know, I want to thank Linda for coming all the way up here and sharing her experience. You know. Good question you have back there, you know, and you know, for me, if I'm working with somebody who's brand new and I can see that they really don't, you know, they haven't had sufficient experience with the nuts and bolts of how to do inventory. You know, it's one thing, I could come up here and entertain you and tell you all kinds of great stuff, you know, but the thing is I want to show you how to do this. You know, I want to show you how to get to this place so you can get free, because that's really what it's all about, is me getting free, you know. If I'm just going to stay sick in this program, you know, then that's not a very inviting message to a newcomer walking in the door. You know, I didn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, our book talks about elimination of drinking is but a beginning. It doesn't say it's a solution. Okay? I need to get well in this program. And if I'm still walking around and I'm still operating every defect of character that I was when I came in the door, and like I said, I've had people walk out of my life in sobriety. That's my experience. You know what I mean? They left me, not because, you know, the booze bottle was out of the picture, but me was still there, you know? And I didn't get to that place of getting free. And like I said, my perspective on how to do the steps, this is how I was shown, you know? And I'm not saying what you're doing is wrong, you know, and I've done it other ways, and I have something to compare, you know? And I can only tell you what's worked, you know, for me. And it's, what's worked for me is what our founders had said. That's why I always open up the book. When I start with somebody, I start with them at the beginning in the general information before you even get to it. And what it says here is to show other alcoholics in squiggly writing, meaning really important, precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. Precisely. You know, if I give you a precise recipe on how to make brownies, and you like my brownies that I made, and you go, I want that recipe, and you take it home, and you call me up a week later, you throw a party, and you don't like the reaction you got from your friends that ate my brownies, right? The first thing I'm going to do is say, well, let's go over the recipe. And what I find out is they left this out, they added this in. You know, I'm not here to share my opinion with you. If I can't reconcile it with what's in this book, I'm playing with your life at that point. You know what I mean? Like I said earlier, I am too stupid to come up with my own program that would work. I'd rather just stay dumb and do what worked. You know? This program was written beautifully. Now, to get back to your question, I have to get to a place where it talks about in the fourth column, where it says, referring to our list again, putting out the minds the wrongs others had done. That means I'm going to put the other person out of my mind. Okay? We resolutely look for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though the situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. That means I'm going to entirely disregard this other person. You know? When I go back and make amends to that person, the last thing I want to do is sit in front of that person and say, I'm here to make amends for my part.
Right.
You know what that automatically implies? That you have a part too. That's not coming from a sincere place. Okay? I'm not going to go to somebody and say, this is my part. I'm here to straighten out what I've done. You know, these are my harms. I'm going to lay that whole thing out. Is there anything that I can do to make it right? I'm there to amend. Not to, you know, just say that this is my part and wait for you to make amends. Right? I've gotten free of that in step four. That's why I'm showing up at your door in step nine. And if I haven't gotten free of that, they're going to know that. That's not going to come out as a very sincere amends. An amends is to make something right, you know? So when I go back to them, you know, I've usually written enough inventory. And like I said, if, you know, somebody's in my life that I, you know, that I feel like they're just they're doing this to me, right? And I've had plenty of those people in my life. But what I've gotten to see through this process is that I picked them. And it's usually I pick them based on selfish and self-seeking motives. And that's what the process has shown me over and over and over again. So even though you might be an a-hole, right? Who picked you, right? Or she ain't the woman that I thought when I walked into the AA meeting and was already, hadn't even spoke to her and already, you know, had her wedding planned out or whatever, you know what I mean? Living in fantasy land, right? And then I wonder why I'm in a place of, you know, 6 months later, I'm miserable, right? And she's wanting alimony or whatever, you know? Why is that? You know, I could always go back to the inventory and see where, you know, I'm not there, you know, it isn't her fault that I'm like this, you know? See, but if I don't get that, then, you know, I'm probably not going to get free of it, you know? So, for me, sitting down with a new person and walking them through this process and doing the first three steps before we even get to an inventory is going to be the thing, you know? And there's a lot of considerations that have to go. You know, I didn't write the book. I just follow the directions. You know, and if there's anything that I can't reconcile with this big book, I mean, I want you to point it out to me, you know? Because this talks about, you know, a precise set of instructions. You don't have to do it. But if you're standing in front of me asking me for help, I'm going to show you exactly and precisely how to recover. And I don't say that from a prideful position. I share that because that's what was shown to me. And anything that I'm sharing with you outside of my experience is just my opinion, right? I showed up to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, based on a lot of opinions, you know? And I'm not willing to gamble with somebody's life showing them anything else. So, you know, for me, that's just kind of what I stick to.
Teddy, I think if I was going to paraphrase what you said, I think what you said was the things that I see in resentment in the fourth step, right, the things that I come to understand by doing the inventory of the fourth step are addressed to the amends that happen in the steps that follow that.
Right, exactly, exactly. You know, and usually, you know, it's kind of like when I went and made amends to certain people, I'm not always clear on what I'm going to make amends for. You know, because one of the questions that it asks in the amends process and one of the principles where it talks is there anything that I didn't mention that you need to tell me about? And I'm usually sitting there for about a half hour, 45 minutes, getting an earful. You know what I mean? You know, and they're not even really concerned. You know, I might think it's some material possession that they're all bothered about. But like I said, if you've seen my other inventory, it's like I robbed them of emotional security, or I stole their peace of mind, basically. They couldn't live in their own skin based on the selfish and self-centered actions that I had been taking. You know, another amends that I had was I actually stabbed a guy out here on the streets. And we were like mortal enemies. And we ended up in jail together, and I fought him in the holding tank in the county jail. And then we ended up on a prison yard together. And then we got into a fight on a prison yard. And we got shot at. We got baton therapy. We got pepper spray. A lot of you probably don't know what that is. But, I mean, some of you do. But we went through all kinds of stuff. This is about 15 years where me and this guy were freaking mortal enemies. I mean, I called him public enemy number one. On my amends list, there's no way I'm going to make amends to this dude. And I was chipping away at my list, you know, and then it gets down to him, you know, and I'm scratching my head and going, oh, man, you know, maybe I'm making too much out of all this AA stuff, right? You know, but, you know, and that's, you know, one of the prayers that I was taught in the eighth step was, you know, the eighth step prayer is, you find the person, you find how to get a hold of them, because I never want to just show up at their door selfishly, you know, without their consent. It talks about consulting with others and getting their permission. Well, his name just started circling around when it was weird how it happened. Here's his name on the list. All of a sudden, I hear about his name freaking coming back to me, people that are talking to him, right? And I'm like, man, quit bringing up his dang name everywhere I go. It was just, but then I was moved to go and ask one of the people that I knew that was close to him for the phone number. And, you know, the prayer that I was taught was, is you dial the number and you say a prayer. And then I made my approach, you know, and told him, you know, he's like, okay, you come over to my house. Yeah. So, and he lives on in a weird side of town. It's all sketchy, and I drive over to where he's at, and I'm in my truck, and I got my head on my steering wheel of my truck, and I go, I'm really making too much out of this AA stuff, you know, because I'm thinking this is a setup, you know. I say the prayer, I get out of my truck, and I walk up to the door, and what was done in 15 years was reconciled in 15 minutes. And that guy calls me today, still calling me, asking me, how'd you do it? I know if you can change, that I can change. I would have never been able to be in maximum service to God and my fellows had I not put these principles into action. You know, I want to share with you my practical experience, how this guy, not in my wildest dream could you ever convince me that could have been possible. How is this dude that hated me so much? I mean, I'd put a rat jacket on him in prison. You know what that looks like, right? Where this dude's, his life's being in danger. I thought there was no forgiveness. I went to him and I said, is there anything that I could do to make this right? And he goes, I'll think about it and I'll get back to you. And I said, within reason. You know what I mean? Within reason. I always throw that out there because people will try to exploit your amends. You know, I've had... You know, And he started calling me back and going, I want to get sober. And he goes, I don't know what to do, but I know you do. And you know, the thing about that is, you know, he's looking at me, sitting across from me, looking at me going, you're not even the same person. That is the powerful experience that I want to share with you. And you couldn't convince me of that otherwise. And my agnosticism gets smashed in that place. My unwillingness to believe that there's a power greater than myself working in my life, I get the proof that I always wanted right there in the pudding. God connects the dots. I don't. I just follow the instructions. And it connects me to the power.
There's something I wanted to add with the guy's question in the back. When you get into the step 11 in the book, it says that if you've now gone through all the steps, then in your daily prayers, it says, as we go through the day, we pause when agitated. And you sound like you were talking about being agitated or doubtful, and ask God for the right thought or action. And it also talks about... we always think we have to struggle in sobriety, and it says we relax and take it easy. It says the right answers will come. And so it's all about my relationship with people in my life is all about my connection with God. If I have, and I've had like lots of fights, like you're talking about, lots of disagreements and relationships, and if the more centered I am in my own side of the street and praying and seeing God's will, the less I have to talk about him and what his behavior is like. And I thought that's what you were asking. So it's more about getting through the steps, cleaning up your mess, do your fourth step, clean up your mess in your 8 and 9, and then get onto the broad highway where you're now in God's, you know, you're one of God's kids. You're doing what you're asking for the right thought or action. If you don't, we're so hot-headed alcoholics. We have to know right now. We've got to answer right now. What do you mean wait 24 hours? That is such a concept. Wait 3 hours before you respond back in that email. Don't fire an email back. How many people have got caught in texting wars? You know, like, how about just take a breath and we'll talk about it in the morning? You know, we don't know how to do that because we got to be right. We got to be right. And I learned a long time ago you have to decide to either be right or be happy. And I've been happy when I've been really, really wrong, but I didn't care. So it's more about perfecting your spiritual life and trying to find that solution so you don't have those constant fights. And I've had periods of no fighting.
Have you ever there's a good exercise that I look that I we look in the unmanageability exercise, which is over on page 52, and this is usually happening to people in a sober condition. Okay, and if you flip over there, and you could ask yourself these questions. Is this happening to me? Like referring to what you're talking about. Am I experiencing this? Where it says, you know, that middle paragraph where it says, we had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply to our human problems the same readiness to change our point of view. It says, we were having trouble in personal relationships. See, when I got into sobriety, I thought, I'm sober now. I'm not having trouble in personal relationships. Right? But I always showed up to the relationship to see what I could get, never to see what I could give, you know, over and over and over. And I always had everybody at arm's distance, you know, and I really got to see that, you know, I am having trouble in my personal relationships based on I've always been a taker. And just because you remove the booze out of my life doesn't mean I'm like that, not like that anymore. I was still exhibiting those same type of behaviors in sobriety. And then it goes on to say we couldn't control our emotional natures. Anytime the book talks about nature, they're talking about what's going on the inside. Okay? You can be boiling my blood on the inside and I'll show you a smile out here. Right? You know, you get me into a heated argument, you know, and you're eating my lunch. But I'm like this with my chest poked out going, you don't bother me. Right? But I'm being driven by this condition, and I can't get free of this on my own. Then it talks about we were prey to misery and depression. How many of us are prey to misery and depression in sobriety? That was my number one thing. I started to get really depressed in sobriety, and I'm going, what the hell is wrong with me? You know, I first started coming to meetings, and I was loving what I was hearing. Then 6 months later, I wanted to kill everybody in the meetings that I was going to. I mean, it was like, what are you looking at? And quit telling that same story, and I don't want to hear you again. You know? I was a miserable human being, and it reeked off me. You invite me to a sober softball game, and I'm pulling a baseball bat on you. You know, it's like I couldn't get along with anybody. Yeah, I mean, it happened. You know, I don't respond to booze like normal people, and I don't respond to sobriety like normal people. I'm a real alcoholic, you know. Just because I'm not drinking doesn't mean I'm well. And then it goes on to say we couldn't make a living. I couldn't set up a life in a way that was conducive for me to be happy. I couldn't just get that, you know, my idea was this, you know, I'll get that right education, right? That'll get me that right job, right? And then I'll buy that right house and that right car and attract that right her, right? And that's me trying to set up my life, and I could never make it happen over and over and over again, right? Then it goes on to talk about we had a feeling of uselessness. Like I said, I walked into the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was staring straight at the ground all the time. I felt like a total piece of crap walking into the room. Until I did the fifth step and got free, then I could look the world in the eye. I didn't know what that was like when I came into the door. I was a taker, okay? And I felt useless. And I felt like you could knew it. You invited me out to the meeting after the meeting, sitting at a table. The only thing that I think is, don't ask me any questions, right? And I was scared to death. Because it's all I'd been doing my whole life is don't ask you anything about me because I've just been taking and taking and taking. And I felt it, that incomprehensible demoralization in sobriety. And then it goes and talks about we are full of fear. I'm not scared of anything. As a matter of fact, that's what I thought when I first started going through this. You know, I've walked on prison yards. I've been out there on the streets. I've done all this stuff. I'm not scared of anything. What are you talking about? But then we started breaking down all these fears, the fear of not being liked, the fear of not being respected, the fear of being unimportant, the fear of being abandoned, all these fears that I got to see through my inventory, right? The fear of being alone, the fear of drinking again, right? The fear of confrontation, the fear of not standing up for myself. All these things, the fear of looking weak, right? I had real image management problem, by the way. You know, I always had to protect my image before my own life. You know what I mean? I mean, these were things that were deep-seated in me, and I didn't get to these things. And I was full of these things, living in this condition, in a sober condition, right? And then not being of real help to other people, like the book talks about, and being unhappy. I could take you to a meeting. I could get up in front of a podium and tell you to keep coming back and tell you some real funny stories. But if you set me down and said, hey, can you really take me through these steps and show me how to have a deep and effective experience with this book, I couldn't have done it. I could pay lip service to it.
I think what I wanted to share on that, too, is that when you get to a place in your sobriety, and most everybody will get to a place in their sobriety, it talks about in the book, where it's like you'll find that no human power can help you. I mean, there's not enough meetings for me, not enough ashtrays for me to wash, and commitments for me to do to keep me sober. And the book says, early on in the book, it says our real job here is to show you how to get a relationship with a God, with a power greater than yourself. That's the whole point. That is the whole point. So whatever you got to do that. And I know that I always like to say, if I am not working in the steps and working with a God, then I'm already working on drinking. I'm already going the other way. I'm already ready for a relapse. So that's just my experience. I mean, I can see lots of different times in my sobriety where I purposely am walking and doing my own thing. Purposely. So, I mean, I think that's the solution for me. It's finding a power greater than myself. If I have a crappy relationship or I get angry in my relationship all the time, then I have to inventory that. And I got to talk to my sponsor. Maybe my sponsor's got some experience, strength, and hope that she can share with me about what she did and how she did it. And so there's no, I always used to think that you had a certain amount of sobriety that you would have it pretty good. And, you know, I'm the perfect example now that, you know, you can be a long time sober and really not be perfect. It's a little old timer trap. There's a lot of old timers in this room. They could probably tell you the same thing. So it's all about finding a God and keeping that God and keeping that God in your life. For me, it is. So that's the answer to that. I mean, I think it's about getting your inventory together and finding out what you do and how you behave, and that's what I've had to do over and over and over again. I would love to say I've risen to AA stardom, and now I don't have these problems anymore. And it's just not, if anybody tells you that, they're either not working, they're not even not working the program, or they're lying. So, we're not perfect, we're not saints. The book doesn't say that, we're not saints. So, but